favor. Matter before us today is SB 259, theft of identity. We have a committee substitute prepared, and we might as well adopt that for purposes of discussion before we call upon the witnesses. Senator Halford? Welcome. Senator Torgerson?
I move the CS for committee substitute version I.
Your objection? There being no objection, it's before us. Ms. Carbonetti, did you wish to talk on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Annie Carbonetti. I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. And we've been working with the Senator's staff on this committee substitute, and we are in support of the CS. It contains many of the provisions that we think are important to bring our statutes up to date with what criminals are doing in terms of theft of identity and theft of various conveniences that we have these days to get money and property, and so we are in support of it. The bill changes theft of a credit card into theft of an access device so that it covers and it defines access device broadly to cover numbers in addition to the actual plate card itself and various other devices that can get you into an account that you can commit fraud with. It also changes fraudulent use of a credit card to fraudulent use of an access device for the very same reason. And for fraudulent use of an access device, that is actually conduct where you obtain property by fraudulent use of an access device. It changes the penalty scheme to reflect that of theft so that fraudulent use of an access device where property or services are obtained in an amount of over $25,000 or more is a Class B felony as it is in theft. And it changes other parts of our statutes in terms of obtaining a credit card by fraudulent means to include obtaining an access device or identification document by fraudulent means. Criminal impersonation in the first degree addresses a situation where an individual is victimized by another person obtaining a document or a number and for that person and going and opening accounts, buying things, credit cards, opening bank accounts, and using that person's identity to obtain property and thereby harming the person, the owner of the identity's financial reputation. Criminal impersonation in the second degree is then thereby created, which provides that it's Class A misdemeanor to do an act in a false, in a assumed character or a false identity to defraud, obtain a benefit, or commit a crime. Business record is amended to include recording. I thought it was an electronic recording. I'd like to double check that with the bill. And then it expands the crime of criminal use of a computer, and that is getting into a computer and doing something that you have no right to do, not just hacking. It's hacking into a computer or exceeding your authorization to use a computer and getting information, personal information that you have no right to obtain, adding information that you have no right to add to harming or enhancing a person's record. And various other acts that you have no right to do in terms of harming a person or property. That's basically what the bill does, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Just one that may be a typo, I don't know. The word orally, I was confused about that. I thought it probably meant orally. And it was just a typo, but because ARA, I looked it up in the dictionary, and ARA is is what we all understand aura to be, the aura or aura of a of an odor or of a of a of a sense or a feeling, a perception around one that emits from something. And I thought we were probably talking about visually or orally, and I think that's probably just needs to be O-R-A-L-L-Y.
Mr. Chairman, that's interesting because that was added by Legislative Affairs, and I think that what the drafter was doing was trying to conform, put this statute in conformity with other statutes similar to it. I would like a, could I have a moment
sure.
While somebody's testifying, maybe?
It appears at least in two different places.
I think.
On the second page, also about line 13. And I don't know, maybe technologically we're moving into holograms or something that do things differently.
The other definition is received through the year.
Received through the year.
I really would like to have that figured out.
Well, maybe that is it. Maybe they're talking about things that come to you through your hearing senses.
Well, it's says that one received through the ear or the sense of hearing, so maybe that's what that's.
I think the purpose is supposed to be creating something that's a hearing. So I know it's used in other parts of the statute. I'm sorry, I'm not bringing it up right now, but I will be glad to.
Well, it's something that could be technically changed very quickly, Sebastian.
I think it's supposed to be, the idea is hearing, and it's used in other portions of our statute for that purpose. And I think that's why the drafter did it, to bring it in conformity. But I will get a definite answer for you.
Okay. Well, Annie, thank you very much. Any questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I have one. Just
go ahead, Senator Jorgensen.
Why are we taking out credit card and using access device? Is that defined somewhere? Do we know what that is? I didn't.
Here, yes, it is.
Oh, here it is. Never mind.
Yeah,
I found
back.
I looked for it and didn't see it. Okay.
It is a broader definition.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. I just didn't see it first time I looked.
Thank you.
Okay, we also have Blair McCune on teleconference. Blair, do you have a copy of the CS that's before the committee?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Blair McCune, Deputy Director at the Public Defender Agency, and I did get a copy yesterday.
Okay, good. Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm concerned about the breadth of the bill. I think that we should bear just a couple of principles in mind when looking at something like this. The first thing I think that's really important is we don't want to outlaw normal commercial activity over the internet or normal type of computer practices. The second thing is because this is these are more or less property crimes, the penalty of the offense should be related to the actual harm caused. With financial and property crimes, they should be linked to a value of some type of theft or some type of loss in monetary terms. And the third thing is important is I think that the mental state should be carefully worded so that things done by mistake or things done out of curiosity or kind of poking around aren't made illegal when what we should be after is things done knowingly and with intent to defraud. That said, I guess I'll just go through the bill and say, you know, as far as Section 1 is concerned, we've seen some of this material stored in computer disks, and that's kind of the vogue these days, I guess, rather than photographs, negatives, and slides. So, you know, as far as that's concerned, I don't have much of a problem with Sections 1 or 2. Section 3 on line 18, access device, that definition gives us some concern. I think the definition is way back in page 6, around line 18. And if you read it pretty carefully, it includes any kind of identification number, like Alaska driver's license number or social security number, bank account number, I would think would be included in this. And then it says capable of being, or credit card number, capable of being used alone or in conjunction with another access device. So what I think it gets at is data that might be collected in the course of normal commercial activity that unless we're careful will be considered an access device. So we have a theft of the third degree of a person obtains. The theft statutes are not, I'm not so concerned about that because it has an intent to permanently deprive another person of property, although I have some concerns about it. If you obtain social security numbers or a number of license numbers or things like this, you might be snooping around, which is bad, but it won't necessarily be theft in the traditional sense. I think Section 4 does a good job of linking, in subsection B of the statute, does a good job of linking the harm to some kind of value or property that the person loses. And I think that's a key thing, and I hope that that's a guiding principle in the other statutes as well. In subsection 5, that's one of the ones I think that's has some overbreadth problems. If a person buys an access device from a person other than the issuer, now because access device is so broadly defined, this could be maybe a list of driver's license numbers or social security numbers or something along those lines instead of what we think of as a credit card or so I'm concerned about that. Subsection 2 has with intent to defraud, so I'm less concerned about subsection 2. And then subsection 3 also has intent to defraud. Going on to section 6, criminal impersonation, once again, possessing an access device of another person and using that to find another access device. People shouldn't probably snoop around, but if you're snooping around and find a social security number and then use that to find a driver's license number, the penalty here is a Class B felony, a very serious offense, up to 10 years in jail. And it could involve any damage to the financial reputation of another person, but that damage isn't quantified. The next section that I have some concerns with is, Section 10 makes deceptive business practices a Class C felony if a computer is used. And I think computers are used in so much of business practices that it might be better just to go back to linking it to the value or the harm caused rather than the fact that a computer is used. That making it a Class C felony if somebody uses a computer to do a deceptive business practice, certainly that's a bad thing. But if the value lost is $50, you know, I don't think we should have it a Class C felony. The next Section 11, I also think it's a very complicated statute. I think it's, you know, certainly not the right thing to do to exceed a person's access when using computers, but I think people kind of tend to do that just out of curiosity or whatever. And I think it ought to be real clear that, and the statute, you know, just obtaining information concerning a person, exceeding a person's authorized access to a computer and obtaining information concerning a person seem to be pretty broad to us. some of the other sections have, I think, more protections, but we'd sure like to see some intent to defraud or intent to commit a crime.
Let me interrupt you there for a minute. On Section 11, where we're talking about a person commits the offense of criminal use if they exceed the person's authorized access, would that take in and finally give us some form of hammer on the people who violated the privacy rights of 76 different people who were running for office or their families, which we commonly refer to as the Apson scandal down here?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. I'm not, you know, we didn't get involved in that case at all, so I can't speak to that case at all. I don't, you know, just as I understand it, if you have access, authorized access to an Apson terminal, and you use that to obtain information about a person, I don't know that that would be, it might well be, I guess, I don't know. If your authorized access, I guess, depending on how it's interpreted, is to use it only for work purposes and you're doing something else with it, maybe that would.
Yeah, well, under existing state law, it was a felony to have done so, or a misdemeanor, I should say, Class A misdemeanor, and under federal law, it was a felony to have done so. As you can well imagine, a person who has the right of access into that computer and signs an agreement they shall not exceed those rights of access, in other words, they can only access them for the purposes of a criminal complaint or a criminal file or investigation, and then they decide to run your mother on it to find out where she lives, what car she drives, whether or not she's got any background, and then uses that for some other purpose, that is, in fact, a crime, both under federal law and state law. But we were unsuccessful in getting this attorney general to prosecute any of those people, so I was just curious as to whether or not this might tighten that loophole up a little more. But obviously you weren't involved in that, Blair, so I'm just kind of interrupting you, and I shouldn't have. You go ahead.
I guess that brings me to the other point I had. I did send down a couple of other statutes that I found. Ms. Carpinetti said that she'd gotten the definition from access device from the federal law, so I went ahead and faxed that down.
Yeah, we have them in our packets right here.
Yeah. And the thing about the federal law that really struck me was that almost every phrase begins with knowingly and with intent to defraud, da-da-da-da-da. So the mental, and then at the end of most of these things is obtains of anything of value aggregating $1,000 or more during that period. So they have real tight mental state and at the end have value added to it. I also looked at Washington, and that was kind of interesting to me because I figured Washington kind of a technological capital these days would have a very complicated and sophisticated statute, but they just have one on criminal trespass in the first degree, which is a real computer trespass in the first degree, which is very simple and direct and easy to understand. If you're into a computer without access, intentionally gains access to the system, so you've got the mental state there. And if you're intending to commit another crime in it by doing so, that's a Class C felony. And if you're intentionally gain access under other circumstances, that's what's in Alaska law Class A misdemeanor. Seems like a real simple way to do it. They have a similar definition of access device, but I think it's more directed toward financial accounts rather than social security numbers and so on.
Blair, do you have places in the legislation where you would like to see the intent language improved? And if so, where, on what lines do you suggest it?
Mr. Chairman, I would... I would think in the fraudulent use of an access device, that has intent to defraud. Okay. That's in Section 4. That has an intent to defraud and also has a value. So I think if Section 4 is okay. Section 5 I'm concerned with. I think you'd want to have an intent to defraud in Section 1. On line 17, page 3 there, knowingly intent to defraud. The criminal impersonation statute, to me, the big thing is the lack of a value or related to the harm. If you damage somebody's financial reputation with, you know, just something that can be fixed really quickly, and there's no real... you know, lasting or no real harm, I don't think it should be a Class B felony.
On Section 7 at this point?
Yeah, this is Section 6.
Criminal impersonation, yeah.
Yeah, criminal impersonation. On line 9 on page 4, it's listed as a Class B felony. And I guess the key is on line 7 and 8, it says damages the financial reputation of another person. You know, obviously it's a bad thing to do, but I think the level of harm, a Class B felony is a pretty serious offense, and it just seems to me that...
Are you working off the work draft? Because I'm getting different numbers.
I am working off the work draft that was faxed to me yesterday.
Yeah, okay. Section 6 is on page 4.
Oh, okay. I guess I have version... H?
Oh, we're working off version I. That's
the
problem.
Okay.
The LIO now has it. It should have it there for you. Annie Carpinetti was sticking her hand up, too, and I'm not cutting you off. Blair, she wanted to make some comments on intent also.
Sure, and I know Ms. Carpinetti's been to a continuing legal education program about this, so I certainly want to defer to her.
Through the chair,
yes.
Mr. Chairman, I'm concerned about the culpable mental state of knowingly and with intent to defraud. That's not the way we draft our statutes in Alaska. We put a culpable mental. We don't put two culpable mental states in one bad act. And I'm sure that the drafters of the statute would come back and take out knowingly and with intent to defraud, because intent to defraud, intentional conduct, is the most serious and the most difficult to prove. Culpable mental state, and that is by our statute includes knowing conduct, criminal negligent conduct, and reckless conduct.
That was my understanding also.
We just wouldn't want to have two culpable mental states for one
right.
act because one includes the other. And I know the feds do it sometimes. I'm not sure why, but you know they go by a different drafting manual than we do. The reason we put criminal impersonation in the first degree without an amount is it's really hard to quantify. Financial reputation, and as we talked about last time, when a person is damaged, when a person steals your identity and racks up and charges goods at a department store, or buys a car, opens a bank account, and writes checks, the problem is now is our law doesn't consider the person whose identity is stolen to be the victim. It considers everybody else, you know, the department store, the bank, the person who sold you the automobile, they're the victims, and that is who the police goes to and tries to rectify their damage. But for the people, the victims that we have in Alaska, it's very serious, and it takes years. And you're never actually free because the person who took your identity always has that number. And the person in Ketchikan that we were talking to, she has locks put on for opening accounts. She orders a credit report every few months just because this person in Washington has never been prosecuted. And even if she had been prosecuted, she would still have her Social Security number and her credit card number. And it's a continuing offense that it's very difficult to deal with, and you really can't put a number on that damage. That's why we didn't put a number on that particular one.
Now, which section are you addressing there that does
section
not have...
Section 6, on my version, it's on page 4.
Right.
Section 6.
The
state would have to prove that the person had an identification or access device or identification document of another person, uses that device to obtain, open an account, obtain an access device, or obtain property and services, and in addition, damage the financial reputation of the other person.
Okay. Right ahead, Senator.
Can I ask you?
Yeah, please.
And you might have gotten to this. You obtain a false identification. The services you get are the services of alcohol, and you leave without paying the bill. Does that create a Class B felony?
Through the chair, I don't believe so, because I don't think you would be damaging... That's an interesting question.
Would you be damaging the financial reputation of the other person?
Of the other person that you...
I think you are.
But
it doesn't quantify the amount.
That's the kind of stuff I'm worried about. I don't want to be overbroad. That's what I...
To obtain property and services, well, a drink would be considered property or services, right?
Sure.
I assume. Well, that's a good point. We certainly wouldn't want to be making a B felony out of using a fake ID.
It has to be a fake ID of somebody that's a real person instead of making one up. But if you went and got a driver's license, which just changed your picture in their driver's license,
mm-hmm.
and then you went in and were served, and they happened to remember who the driver's license was, may have been a strange name, or they may have just thought, you know, that's an interesting person, so they remembered it. So you obtain the services, and you skip out with a 4-drink tab. At that point, it would seem that you've made that pattern complete and made yourself a B felon.
Through the chair, that it probably wouldn't happen because, you know, does a bartender look for your ID and then remember it in terms of you give your ID to get in the door. You don't give your ID when you're paying the bill. So I don't think it would really apply.
Well, some of these little bars, it's the same person.
Uh-huh.
There's not somebody at the door.
Yeah.
Well, maybe...
I think maybe...
And because the person was a particularly good-looking girl or particularly interesting-looking person in some way or other, something different about them, somebody remembers a name. I mean, I'm just trying to avoid creating something that's, you know...
It may be too... Well, I think you make a good point, and we ought to give some consideration to that.
A better analogy, probably, is teenage daughter takes mom's credit card. Signs in at Nordstrom's as if she's mom, and signs that name, and walks out the door with goods. Is that a B-class felony? She has damaged the reputation of another, now maybe within the family. Maybe make a better analogy out of it. She babysits in somebody's house, takes their credit card.
Well, that would concern me a lot more than the original.
Well, yeah, I'm getting closer
I'm,
to
yeah,
where
I'm not saying
problem,
that any of this stuff shouldn't be prosecuted, shouldn't be prosecutable, shouldn't be a crime. I'm just saying that I think a B felony may be overreaching. That's all.
Would your suggestion be a C felony?
Well, it probably wouldn't be a C felony for the 19-year-old using her sister's ID, but when you get to the credit card, you're getting a lot closer,
yeah,
because the potential for damage is a lot higher.
Well, I would say that when we look at cases that we prosecute, we don't prosecute fake IDs at this level.
I understand, but
well, in fact, though, on the use of a fake ID, we've already put some very, very strict penalties in there. I forget what they're up to now, but
I think it's a Class A misdemeanor in Title IV.
It's a Class A misdemeanor, but it's got an exceptionally high. Well, I know what it, I don't know. The penalties are over on the other side. Anybody accepts an ID that's fake, and they knew it to be so, they can lose a $250,000 license over it too. So I know we've got some tough stuff on the other side of that question.
Well, there's a lot
of
families.
That would apply to the person.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the Blockbuster example, where somebody takes your Blockbuster card, rents a video, keeps it. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a value on the other end. You used an access device, which doesn't have to be a credit card. It just explains who somebody is.
Well, put this.
Gives them access to rent that $3, and then the guy keeps it, or the
mm-hmm.
person keeps it.
And put it together with an 18-year-old kid whose parents are going through a divorce. So that one person uses somebody else's card and the other parent says, oh, good, serves him right. That's not what
don't
happened.
Have my kid for doing that. No.
Yeah. I guess that's why Blair was saying maybe if we could quantify it somehow to make it simpler, as we did in the other sections, to give it some sort of monetary objectivity, and yet it's also very difficult to provide a monetary level if you're talking about damages to someone's reputation.
That's correct, and that's the whole problem is that the monetary amount is what they're taking from. I mean, the owner of the bar would be the one that would suffer the monetary harm. The person whose identity you used would be suffering the damage to reputation. But whether I don't know that would be financial reputation. I suppose if they remembered and. If the bar owner said, well, this person doesn't pay for his drinks. That's something that I think you raise a good point, and we ought to consider how we could quantify it so that we can pursue people who do serious damage to other people, but to avoid...
you were talking about the case in Ketchikan, Chris Carlisle down there. I mean, that lady ran up thousands and thousands of dollars against Chris's account, so to speak. But Chris notified the people it wasn't her, so the cops in California treated it as the victims were the guy that sold the car, the guy that in the bank, and so on. Those were the victims. Chris wasn't the victim. And yet she's the one that still has to protect herself almost daily from that very individual.
Is there any provision, and you probably asked this before when I was out, but can you change your Social Security number in your lifetime for any reason other than Federal Witness Protection Program?
Mr. Chair, I think you can, but I would have to get the details. But I have heard that is not an answer to this, because from what Chris told me, she investigated that possibility, and it wasn't a possibility that she thought would protect her. But I'll be happy to get details about under what
Chris. Well, of course, since the state now requires you to put it on everything under the sun, it's a kind of a worthless protection.
Yeah,
everybody's got everybody's Social Security number that wants it.
I just thought of another weird one. That if you borrow your sister or brother's ID and you're a kid to get into an R-rated movie, you just committed a second-degree felony, right, or something, because you obtained a benefit. You get to watch the movie.
No, that would be an A misdemeanor. That'd be second degree.
A misdemeanor.
Well, let's lock them all up.
You go to jail for a year.
Well, as long as we can keep your PFDs when we do it, I think we've got enough bills to...
We'll do that.
But if they went and rented an R-rated movie from the video store, then it would be a B film.
C, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it goes to buy a pack of cigarettes. You got to have ID. I mean, lots of.
Yeah.
So it is a serious penalty, but the conduct that we're aiming at is serious conduct, and it causes serious damage, harm to people.
How can we quantify that in here so as to avoid the de minimis cases?
I think we need to do that, and I would like to give it some thought.
Good. Okay. And Blair, would you assist in that also, because you had raised these issues, to provide us, I think you understand Annie's answer at this point on the definitions of mental intent, or mens rea on this, that she says that we have that right now, and that we don't need to follow the federal law, and there is a specific intent required. I mean, Blair, I don't want to mischaracterize your testimony, but some of it sounded like kind of the innocent hacker defense, that if you were just poking around and looking for the fun of it and happened to get into the CIA's computer but didn't really mean to do any really bad harm, that that would be okay. And I don't think we want to really set that up to where it's a free shot either.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Carpinetti is absolutely correct. We wouldn't need knowingly in addition to with intent to defraud. Under Alaska law, if you put with intent to defraud, that covers the mental state and makes it a mental state of intentionally. So she's absolutely right about that. You don't have to, adding knowingly kind of confuses things if you did it in an Alaska statute. I think, you know, it's obviously wrong to go into the CIA's computer, and in fact, that's pretty serious federal offense if you're, depending where you are on the computer, I guess, you can go to their website, but if you, you know, hack down to a certain level or whatever it's called, that would be a problem. But I think it's just a basic concept of the punishment fitting the crime. I'm sure willing to work on that with Ms. Carpinetti as much as I can.
Okay, well, I don't want to take further time today on this. Instead, what I will do is just ask the two of you to work together on that. Let's bring us something back that avoids some of these problems we've brought up. Senator Alford.
I just had a couple of questions on another section. Are you going to stop on the bill altogether, or do you want to go?
No, go. Anything you want to take up now, let's get it out of the way.
Section 11 deals with what's introduced or taken from a computer. It talks about exceeds the person's access, which we understand what that does, but we add or misleading to the existing statutory language. It doesn't look like we define that, and or misleading is a standard that the SEC and stock offerings spends millions of dollars fighting about. And it's just pretty subjective in which to deal with a criminal conviction. I'd like to have it defined or not there. That's my
job. Yeah.
And I'd kind of like to know what it looks like. You may have access to a computer system, but are we creating a crime if you encrypt something in that system without authorization in a system that you have access to? You may be saving your own data.
Through the chair, this would only apply if you are encrypting data that you have no authorization to encrypt. I mean, if it's your own and you can do what you want with it, that's fine. But if you get into a computer, if you have access to that computer, but you go into somebody else's information and encrypt that you have no authority to do so, that would be covered.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering if decrypting information that's confidential is obvious. It's easier to see as it applies there. Encrypting information.
I look at encrypting as the possibility of someone who, I may allow them access to my computer as a business. I'm Yahoo or I'm somebody else. They have access to my computer, and then they encrypt into my computer a virus. But nobody else even knows there. They type in the word happy birthday, and the machine shuts down or something, and maybe the guy makes his living by having cute little cards that sends flowers and happy songs to people over the computer. And as soon as that happens, the virus rips it off. And his whole computer crashes in Albuquerque someplace. Nobody can figure out why until they dig through and find out an encrypted message put in by one of the guy's own employees. It could have exceeded his authority or exceeded the authority of the person who accessed the computer. That's what I think it's about, but I'm not sure.
If that's the case, that's a justified, but again, that one I was trying to figure out how it worked.
Yeah, I wouldn't want it to be some guy working in an office that for security reasons and his own reasons wants to encrypt some of his own information and keep it private to his, maybe he and the boss alone are working on something that, on a mainline computer that others would have access to.
Through the chair, the lead into the section does provide that we have to prove and establish in a case in chief that the person had no right or any to do so or any reasonable ground to believe that he or she had that right to get into to get access to this information and encrypt or decrypt the information.
Yeah, which of course also covers somebody trying to access our criminal files here or our Hess files and hack their way down through them to get to something they're not entitled to. Yes, go ahead.
I might be reaching at this, but let's say that there's so many forms on the internet now that you fill out to get credit and to buy things and get information on, and they could all be said to have a benefit to whoever's doing the work. But if I'm reading this right, if I enhance the information for some personal gain to myself, can I be tried by somebody else using this law we're doing right now?
I don't know. Where is the word?
Or enhances the data record or the financial reputation of a person.
Right. But I'm wondering if I can be that person or if the individual filling that out, and then maybe you want to get back at them. But
your resume falsely in the computer?
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know if it's a big thing. This part scares me because I don't understand exactly what we're doing. I mean, I read what's here and I'm trying to blow holes in it. And I'm thinking about all kinds of things on the computer that are happening nowadays, and if we're actually outlawing them or if we're leaving it pretty broad open. But it seems to me like if as many people are starting to fill out forms, if somebody caught you not filling that form out correctly, you would just reject it and say that's false information or can't prove it or whatever. But now they can, I don't know what it does to you.
Yeah. Well, I can understand how this thing works, though. They want to know whether or not they're going to send me the car or the money or the boat I'm buying, and I tell them that my bank account, cash in my bank account is $500,000. I have just enhanced.
Well, I think in order for it to be covered under this crime, you would have to go into your bank account data and enhance that, having no right to do so. I don't think it would cover just saying, I have $500,000 in a checking account. I think it would have to be going in and changing that in the bank's computer.
Of course, if I could do that, then I'd just go in and write a check the next day. I wouldn't mess around with buying the thing over the computer and waiting 6 weeks for it to be delivered.
Well, I don't know if I read it on, but I don't think it's that narrow. It says, if I introduce misleading information into a computer system to enhance the financial data of a person.
It's just their financial reputation, too. Not even their actual finances, just their reputation.
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, I agree.
We're going into the internet, I think more power to you if you can do that with your boat, Banks going to check that before they ship the stuff, but I'm just wondering if they can turn around and whatever you do, sue me under this
sure.
law that I'm putting in there because, I don't know, maybe they should.
Well, Annie, I think both you and our good friend Blair understand that concern, and we think that's awfully broad, and we have some concerns about it, so if you can do some further limiting or definitional work on that would be great.
I'll be happy to.
Our primary purpose in this legislation is to take care of people like Chris down in Ketchikan so that we can somehow give them a little bit of hammer in the future to take care of those sorts of victims.
And make it clear that the harm has occurred to somebody in Alaska.
Right. And we may be able to accomplish that without going going to this extent, too. I don't know whether we can or not, but Section 11, where we actually get into personal use of a computer, I personally like that very that first section of it, but
well,
for other reasons.
I think, you know, in this whole category, we've got to go back to what damage we have done by legislation in the last couple of years that forces the Social Security number to be on virtually everything,
yep,
to every person in every agency of government. And we have totally destroyed the historical interpretation of Social Security numbers. And if that's the core number that creates the problem, we ought to think about having a responsibility for fixing some of that.
I certainly agree with that.
Well, that brings up, how much of that, most of that's public information now, isn't it?
Yeah, but it, and a lot of it was forced by the feds, too.
Well, I know that, but it's public information, so if it's public information, is there a can there be a misuse of public information? You know, I suppose there could be a misinterpretation of public information, but can there be a misuse? Maybe I use Senator Taylor as a reference, and I don't ask him, and I put his Social Security number down. I go to jail now?
I don't think so under this bill.
Well, is the Social Security number public information now?
No.
It's on the hunting license. I think hunting and fishing license are public information.
No, you can't retrieve that information.
You can't retrieve it?
You can't get that from the state. The state can't give to some third party that information, as far as I know. I'm offended by it being on there also, but it's part of that deadbeat dad stuff,
yeah,
the federal government path.
Well, I think the hunting and fishing license was the only, I don't know. It seemed to me like they were public information, hunting and fishing.
Yeah, well,
I don't think you're correct.
Yeah, we'll all agree on that part of it, but I don't think there's access to that. I don't think I can call up the Department of Fish and Game or Public Safety and say, I want a printout of all the people who've got hunting and fishing licenses and expect to receive their Social Security numbers, too.
But anybody that has a right to ask you for, or for some other reason asks you for,
well, they've got it. Yeah, that clerk at the store, they've got it.
Well,
their files.
I mean, I have an obligation anytime I take a hunting party out, I'm going to sure as heck know they got licenses, tags, and everything else. I got their Social Security numbers.
Right.
I actually think I wrote to the department and received all the data that's on there, but not, that was before the Social Security number fiasco thing, but date of birth and address and all that. Anything that was on there,
sure,
was public, and I'm not sure if the Social Security number is or not.
Well, it was my understanding they're not supposed to be.
I don't believe they are, for DMV also.
Because we talked about that when that bill went through here. In fact, we were very concerned about that. And I don't think that's possible. Well, let's find out.
Well, we lost most of the arguments in that bill.
Yeah, I know.
My Social Security number's on my driver's license.
Yeah, it's been there for a long time. Your person,
any bar that wants an ID from somebody has got your Social Security number.
I'll guarantee every clerk at every airport counter, ticket counter does. That's what you usually show for ID.
Well, we'll do some more homework on this.
Thank you. But I would like, if nothing else, if we can reduce some of these broad scope, accomplish the overall purpose, and it'd be the narrow purpose of attacking the problem, I'd appreciate it. Well, thank you very much for standing by up there, and any assistance you can give us would be continually be appreciated.
It's my pleasure, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Are you adjourned?
We're adjourned, unless anybody has something else you want to bring up.
No.
Well, having three of us here is such a great thing. I'm ready to grab three or four bills and move mine here.
You couldn't even get one out. What do you
mean? I know
it's
mine.
Three or four more. You can't even move your own bills.
That's what you get for picking up such unprovoked goods.
That's true. But, well, it was either me or the governor.